Rick Bayless may be the chef owner of three restaurants in Chicago, but his approach to Mexican cuisine has won him fans all across the country and a number of James Beard Awards. Last year, he was crowned the winner of the first season of Top Chef Masters. He's also the author or co-author of 7 cookbooks, the latest Fiesta at Rick's, written with his wife, Deanne Grohn Bayless. It's called Fiesta at Rick's, and as the title suggests, it's all about entertaining. It's published by W.W. Norton. I'm very pleased to welcome Rick Bayless back to our show.
Hi. Thank you very much, Leonard.
Now, we would assume that the people who would be most knowledgeable about Mexican food would be Mexicans, but three of the most trusted people in the field are from elsewhere. Diana Kennedy, Josefina Howard, you. Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of it has to do with the sort of allegiance people have to their family recipes in Mexico. And so if you ask them about the food, they'll tell you exactly what they grew up on, what they ate in their region, but they may not have traveled a long distance away from it. The three of us that you mentioned that have spent a lot of time working on Mexican food, writing about Mexican food, educating the world at large about Mexican food, are folks who don't have Mexican grandmothers, don't have that familial allegiance, and we can celebrate the cuisine of every family in Mexico.
And as you say, no regional allegiance, because Mexico is a country of many different regions. In the way that China is, I understand that Mexico, in fact, Mexican cuisine has the second most recipes of any cuisine following only Chinese.
That's what they say. I haven't collected them all myself yet. I'm still working on that part of it. But if you go to the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, the people will be eating a completely different cuisine than what people in the northern part of Mexico do. When you think about the regional variations in the United States, say what people are eating in Maine versus New Mexico, the cuisine is even more drastically different than that.
Now, it also Mexican food also requires different techniques than what we're used to, the kind of techniques that we use for French or Italian cuisine.
It's more along the lines of learning an Asian cuisine. A lot of techniques that I won't even say a lot of techniques, just a few techniques that are fairly easily mastered. But the first time you do it, you feel all thumbs when you're going through it. But they create a certain flavor. That's what you're going through or a certain texture. And once you sort of understand those basic principles, the cuisine is actually quite simple.
Do you think that Mexican food gets short shrift in this country because most people think of it as inexpensive and very spicy?
I think a lot of times the immigrant population that came to the United States, they were looking to make a living, as most immigrant families are, and they created a cuisine that was very distinct from the cuisine that they grew up with, thinking that that's what was going to be the most popular and would make them the living that they were looking for. And I think it became sort of institutionalized. And then, of course, back in the 60s, when the whole idea of chain restaurants came about and theme restaurants, that kind of Mexican-American cuisine that was beginning to emerge became codified. And then it was just blasted out all through the United States and beyond. And now when you go anywhere in the world and you say Mexican food, what they know is Mexican-American food that actually came through the chain channels.
Calmex and Tex-Mex.
Yes.
But do you see your job to some degree as also educating people as to what the real stuff is?
Yes. I think that actually Tex-Mex food in some ways is its own thing, its own kind of cuisine, because that was not necessarily something that was developed by immigrant families, but by the families that lived in Texas, because we have to keep in mind the fact that up until the mid-1800s, that was all part of Mexico, and including over into New Mexico.
And if you go into some of the border towns on the Mexican side, they're eating flour tortillas, though you'll never find them further south.
That's exactly right. So that is its own cuisine, and I don't intend at all to put it down, because I grew up eating Tex-Mex food and I love it.
But you're from Oklahoma?
I grew up in Oklahoma. But once you get past that whole northern desert area, the top third of Mexico, the food becomes quite distinctively different, and it's more varied. It's got a bigger repertoire, and it relies much more on fruits and vegetables than what most people ever associate with Mexican cuisine.
And your first restaurants really stress the fancier Mexican food, which you find in Mexico, but you didn't find in America.
Correct.
But there are a number of recipes inspired by Mexican street food in this book. Mm-hmm. Is that something that we're really learning to discover in this country?
Yeah, I've kind of stayed away a little bit from the street food things because that is the inspiration for a lot of that Americanized Mexican food. And so I think now we're sophisticated enough as a culture to know that there's the real thing, the real street food, the gutsy stuff. And then there's the mamby-pamby stuff that doesn't have all of that flavor that I associate with the real thing. And that's what's become mostly fast food in the United States.
But we're seeing these food trucks in New York.
Now we're starting to see a lot more of the real thing coming about. And of course, in L.A. right now, the big fusion thing with the Korean taco trucks that I have to say, I have eaten that food, and it is some of the most delicious food I've ever eaten in my entire life. Who would ever have thought that Korean food in a corn tortilla could be just absolutely sublime, but it can be.
My guest is Rick Bayless, whose latest book is Fiesta at Rick's, Fabulous Food for Great Times with Friends. It's published by Norton. Is Mexican food very popular in Chicago? I always wondered why so many Mexicans went to Chicago rather than to New York or to Boston.
But my understanding was that the truth of the matter, I think, is that New York was a Puerto Rican town, and it was the Mexicans didn't have much of a space here. And as the Puerto Rican population sort of dispersed, that there was a lot more Mexican population that came in to fill that void. But that's only been within the last 15 years or so. In Chicago, that immigration from Mexico has been going on really strongly since the 60s, especially people came originally to work in the steel mills and then moved into the service industry. And so there's a huge, it's the second largest concentration of Mexicans in the country.
Let's talk about this book. It contains more than just recipes. In fact, you refer to it as part cooking manual, part party planning guide, part encyclopedia. You're filling in all the gaps from the previous books?
Actually, this is a really nice it's a completely different approach than anything that I've ever done before. I'm a person that loves to have parties. I love to have people over. I love to share food. And when you're doing that, it's kind of different than what I've talked about in some of my other books, especially my last book, which was Mexican Every Day, which was very simple everyday kinds of recipes that you could make in half hour or so. This is food when you're thinking about sharing something with people that you care about, that you want the food to really be that spark. You want it to be a catalyst to get the party going. So all the dishes in here, they're not necessarily slavishly authentic. They are the kinds of food that I do when I'm cooking at my house and I'm going to have a lot of people over. I like food with drama. I want something that is going to stick in people's minds. So there's all different kinds of things, from how to dig a pit in your backyard for that once-in-a-lifetime experience of doing a whole animal, to sort of simple tapas style, but every dish having great flavor.
And you have seven different recipes for guacamole. I've known a couple in Mexico,
yeah.
Mole Verde and a few others, but you even have moles. You have a wide range of things, and we've posted one, a bacon and tomato guacamole.
Doesn't that sound good? I mean, every time I say it, my mouth waters. It's because when I make a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich, I always put avocado on it because I think avocado has got a creaminess that goes beautiful with the salty, smoky crunch of the bacon. So I just decided to do it in a guacamole one day, and it was just absolutely delicious. Fruit goes really beautifully with avocados, so we have a mango guacamole with red onions, sun-dried tomatoes. You can grind up pumpkin seeds and put those into a guacamole, and it changes a character, but in a very delicious way. Avocados are very malleable. They'll take on practically anything that you want to put in it.
And as I said, we've posted a recipe on our show page. and also one for a summer margarita, which includes cucumbers. And you devote an entire section to tequila tasting. I guess it's we're getting more sophisticated than we were when college kids just threw back a lot of shots.
Well, 23 years ago, when we opened Frontera Grill, the most sophisticated I think this is the case. The most sophisticated tequila that we could lay our hands on was Cuervo Gold. Now we don't even have it in our bar because everything that we've got in that bar is 100% agave. There's such beautiful craftsmanship going on amongst the distilleries in Mexico. You can find a wide range of approaches. Now we even talk about where was the agave grown? Was it in the highlands of Jalisco or in the lowlands? Because where it was grown, how it was pruned, all of those things really affect the end result, and it's a very sophisticated beverage.
Do you enjoy being on TV as much as it seems? Your PBS series, Mexico, One Plate at a Time, is currently in its seventh season.
Seventh season, yes. For such a niche little show, I'm really thrilled.
And then you are on Top Chef Masters. Is that as nerve-wracking as it appears?
More nerve-wracking than it appears. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
What do you think about TV and food? Is it really, do you think, getting and shows like Top Chef, getting people to think more about cooking, or are they involved more in the drama, watching shows like Top Chef Masters as a kind of sporting event?
It's a sporting event, but I'll take anything that I can get in terms of actually educating the general public about how delicious food can be and how simple it can be to prepare something with fresh ingredients. And sometimes we got a chance to really show that on Top Chef Masters, because when they give you 20 or 30 minutes to do a quick fire challenge, You have to think really quickly on your feet, but you also have to choose something where you can get the absolute most out of a few ingredients so that you can win that challenge.
You're also the guest chef of the White House State Dinner on May 19th that honored Mexican President Felipe Calderon and his wife, Margarita Zavala. There must have been a lot of pressure, you know,
that was
cooking for the Mexicans who know something about Mexican food.
Yeah, and they were incredibly complimentary. Yes, the two chefs that went with me and I, we went out 3 days early so that we would have the opportunity to make everything ourselves, because we couldn't bring anything into the White House. We worked so slowly and so carefully because we wanted every single thing to be absolutely perfect. And, you know, I think that dinner went off without a hitch. We were super happy with it.
Just one more thing. I was wondering about the Gulf oil spill. Does it have an impact on Mexican cuisine? Because so much of the food of the coastline from Yucatan all the way up to Veracruz and above relies on the seafood that comes out of the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah. Well, right now it's contained enough that on the Florida side, they're still fishing. And then sort of the Texas side, they're still fishing. It's mostly those states that are in between that has really affected things. But I have to say, from a customer standpoint, people are very leery of anything that's coming out of the Gulf right now, which is kind of unfortunate, because a good restaurateur, a good chef, is going to always choose really good products. And if it happens to come out of the other part of the Gulf, it shouldn't be hurt right now, because those people, their livelihood is based on that.
Rick Bayless has written with his wife, Deanne Grone Bayless, Fiesta at Rick's, Fabulous Food for Great Times with Friends. It's published by Norton. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you so much.